Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV? How's it?
Good morning.
How are you, my G-Force?
All right, dude. How are you?
I'm good, man.
Nice.
I'm strong.
Good.
Are you strong?
Yeah, I'm fine.
You're just fine.
Yeah.
Welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering in to our lovely video store. We've got lots of movies and series here on the shelves. And we are going to have ourselves a fat chat here behind the counter. I am joined by Graham G-Force Hackney.
Hello.
Who is a editor and very much the producer of the show.
Hmm.
And my name is Russell. I'm the owner of The Bioscope.
Yes.
Which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And very much the subject of today's episode.
Yeah.
So today is a special one. We have spoken about it for a while.
Hmm.
We're not working behind the counter of the video store. As I said, I own the cinema, The Bioscope, which in this month has turned 15.
15 years old, man.
It's wild.
Yeah.
I actually can't believe it. And every time I think of how we were going to celebrate this milestone, I immediately realize just like how much there is.
Yes.
How many photos or how many posters or how many filmmakers or how many sort of private events. And so we realized one of the ways we should approach this is to break it up into lots of different aspects and things.
Mm.
And one of the things we do once a week
is
a podcast.
Yes.
Where what I've enjoyed over the last 170 odd episodes is that the story of The Bioscope actually does come out in the conversations, especially the guest episodes, where a lot of them are people who I've come to know in the film world mostly through The Bioscope.
Yeah.
And so we get to tell the story, but I thought it would be cool to do a special Bioscope episode where just myself and you answer a set of questions that can tell the story of The Bioscope.
Cool.
When we were putting together a press release about it, our lovely publicist gave me a whole bunch of questions, and I'm not that good at writing the answers.
Right.
So I find that a bit boring. I prefer to speak.
Okay.
So like with the band, for example, I always did the phone interviews.
Yes.
Because I found it boring to write out
the
answers. So this actually inspired me to go, well, why don't I answer these questions with you over the course of an episode where I can speak unedited about all the Bioscope history and try and compress as much of a story of The Bioscope into one conversation.
Okay.
We are then still going to talk about all our other stuff.
Yeah.
The big movie of the last week was 28 Years Later.
Mm-hmm.
You had a chance to watch it?
I did.
You did. You went out to the media screening?
Yes.
I could not make that one, unfortunately, so I haven't seen it. So I want you to tell me about it.
Cool.
And I've also missed a bit of a boat.
Oh, yes.
Well, all three, to be precise. I missed 28 Days Later. I then didn't watch 28 Weeks as a result of that.
Yes.
So I want to very much watch 28 Days.
It's a banger.
It's a banger.
It's a classic.
Okay. So we have ourselves an outlet for this.
Yes.
Which is where the clerks of the video store put on a screening at the Bioscope. And we call it Video Store Presents.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our chance to screen the movies that like some of us know and love and the others haven't seen.
Cool.
So I think we should do 28 Days Later.
Yes.
All right. We've got a slot for it. It is going to be on Wednesday, the 2nd of July at 6 p.m., the details of which will be in the details of this episode.
Yes.
And come out, especially if you live in Joburg, obviously.
Definitely.
This is our chance to watch the movies that we should have watched. we missed our opportunity to watch From Dusk Till Dawn in and around Sinners. That would have been great. but sometimes this comes up organically. It's not always a movie that's on at the moment where we use this as an excuse to watch the movies that we should have watched.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. So Video Store Presents, 28 days later.
Cool. So you're also doing a Superman screening.
Yeah.
Just before Superman comes out.
Yeah. No, I always wanted to do that. With yes. the new Superman coming out, that is on the...
11th of July?
11th of July, the Sunday before.
Cool.
We are doing the original
yes.
Superman, the 1970-odd, 78.
Yeah.
Yeah, the stories behind that are amazing.
Mm.
Because no one had really ever done a superhero movie
no.
before. And they pulled a whole bunch of cool shit at the time.
Yes.
And they announced so much more before they even made anything.
Yes.
And they did this whole thing at Cannes,
mm.
which is a very famous stunt where they took, you know, however many letters Superman is.
Yes.
And they had those boats put out in the ocean,
mm.
which, with each boat having S
yeah.
and a U and a P. And so everyone got very intrigued.
Yep.
But they hadn't done anything
yes.
yet and all this shit. So, yeah, that's very exciting.
Yeah.
And it's fucking long. It's like 2.5 hours
yeah.
or something. But yeah, so we'll chat more about 28 Days Later and
cool.
Our regular stuff, which is the Hey, Did You Guys See news.
Cool.
We'll get to that afterwards.
Yeah.
Usually we do that stuff before.
Yes.
But I think let's dive straight in. One more little announcement is the fact that in the week that this episode is coming out, we have the Encounters Documentary
oh,
Film
yes.
Festival. We had a special guest episode last week with war photographer
mm.
Bram Jansen as a lovely way to kind of usher in the themes
yeah.
and the ideas of Encounters. So thank you to everyone who tuned in for that one. But yeah, Encounters continues. We've got some sold out screenings this week.
Awesome.
As a result of which one sold out the quickest, we've added those into the best of slots.
Okay.
So there's more chances to watch those.
Cool.
But there's some cool stuff, man.
Nice.
There's from all over the world, stuff about SpaceX, stuff about mental health, stuff about South African photographers that we don't know about,
cool.
Sam and Zima, or that we just should learn more about. So
mm.
All of that is on the Bioscope's website or encounters.co.za, and very much worth your time for this week.
Cool.
All right, should we do this, G-Force?
Let's do it. So when did you guys first get the idea for the Bioscope? Not like when it opened, but when that first, like, the iteration began.
Yeah. So we were at Wits.
Okay.
And when I say we, it was myself and my good friend Daryl Else.
Yes.
And when you're at Wits doing what we did, which was a BADA.
Okay.
It's a professional course. You have to do some form of, it's honors. Yeah, it's an honors degree.
Okay.
So you have to do some kind of special project or thesis in your final
yes.
year.
Yeah.
And Daryl, I remember him announcing it once. He's like, yeah, I'm writing my thesis on whether or not there could be space for an independent cinema in Johannesburg.
Right.
And I was like, that's cool. And he did a whole bunch of research and he looked into it. And I was this young, impressionable varsity kid, as we all are.
Mm.
But I at that point had realized I don't think I wanted to be in production.
Oh, right.
We were both film students.
Yes.
But I don't know whether I enjoyed actually like being on set and
okay.
making it. I was probably leaning more towards being like a producer.
Yes.
I liked the idea of, I was more excited about holding the DVD cover
oh,
that was
right.
designed of our film than actually like being on set, getting it in the can.
Yeah.
I fucking hated editing.
Oh, right.
Just like being in this dark room by myself. I like took every opportunity to have a break and talk to people.
Yeah.
So I think if anything, it was maybe producing or directing, but
okay.
Production is hard.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to be up all night and you got to, you know, someone's got to film that sunrise.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be there. You got early nights,
yeah.
you know, late nights. I remember for the first time feeling coffee move through my veins, like pulse through my veins.
Yes.
Which is an odd feeling to feel for the first time. So anyways, and at the same time, I was also very excited and optimistic about discovering Johannesburg.
Right.
That was quite an important thing for me because I've been lucky enough to travel around the world and,
mm.
and, you know, be at the bottom of, you know, these huge buildings and skyscrapers.
Yes.
And then sort of quite naively, at least in high school, going, we don't have that
yeah.
in Joburg.
Yeah.
We, right? We don't.
No.
And then I remember once seeing actually traveling past downtown and going, oh, we do have buildings. This is like in high school or primary school, going, oh, we do actually have these big buildings. Why don't we go there? Why aren't we there?
Yes.
Why aren't we walking there or walking around? And then, of course, you grow up and realize all the complexities of Joburg. Yeah. But then it was very exciting for me to be a part of a group that felt like we were discovering downtown.
Right.
Some bars were opening up and live music venues. And I remember the articles about, you know, white people are now in Newtown, you know, like that being a thing. And so it was quite important for me to be discovering and learning about downtown. Mm. So these are all the building blocks.
Yeah.
Here's a little tidbit that I don't think ever told anyone.
Yeah.
I never read Daryl's thesis.
Oh, right.
I never read it. I don't even think I read a page of it. But I was his good friend that was like, let's fucking do it. Mm. Because this should happen.
Yeah.
Independent cinemas had existed throughout history in Johannesburg. And unlike Cape Town, where the Labia had stuck around as this independent cinema site, Johannesburg's ones were all obliterated, and my whole life had been shopping mall cinemas.
Yes.
The multiplex shopping mall cinemas, which obliterated most or many independent cinemas around the world, but many major cities still kept some.
Yeah.
Most were gone, but some remained. Mm. But in Joburg, in classic like ruthlessness of Joburg, they were all gone. When I was there.
Right.
So we could bring something like this back. We, at Varsity Students, had been going to these like film nights, and I'd even participated with some of my films being in these like student film nights, which were often packed in the sort of back of restaurants and in these venues. But no one was really talking about something permanent day in, day out.
Right.
So we then started with this little tester where within the film department, we put on these screenings. Just as like, I think that could have actually been part of Daryl's process or part of the academicness of it. Like he had to have like a trial. We did this trial.
Right.
But we did a few screenings of that. And that was always interesting to start presenting these films together. Right. And then what was really exciting was connecting once with Bradley Kirschenbaum, who is the creator and the force behind Love Josie.
Right.
Which is a very cool clothing and kind of household product brand celebrating Johannesburg. We stock a lot of the Love Josie stuff in the gift shop here at the Bioscope. But primarily it was t-shirts. And he had been connected with Mobuning, which at that point wasn't Mobuning. It was just Arts on Main, which was this the first development of what was to become the Mobuning precinct.
Yes.
And the visionary behind that was this guy, Jonathan Liebman. And Jonathan had said, oh, and we can do screenings up here on this roof.
Okay.
And Bradley knew about me and knew about our wish to grow this idea of the Bioscope and screenings. And so Bradley connected us with Jonathan.
Right.
And we then started as a little screening project where it was like these free screenings.
Right.
In Arts on Main.
Okay.
Just to get started. Just to try and get this idea going. Mm. And I think at that point, by that point we were called the Bioscope.
Okay.
We were originally looking at Newtown.
Right.
Inside Museum Africa as an auditorium.
Oh, yes.
And we were contemplating or talking to them, but it wasn't getting anywhere in terms of bureaucracy and too much red tape. And, and I remember once, I think, driving, going, the word bioscope's got to be in it. Because it was a very like uncool word growing up. Like your gran said the word bioscope.
Yes, I was going to say that's what my grandmother always referred to movie theaters as.
Yeah, and no one in our generation, not even our parents, were using the word bioscope.
Yes.
But we had realized that these other sites were all called like the something bioscope. So like at Varsity, I went to shows in the Gem Bioscope, which is this old building, you know, in almost like Troyville.
Okay.
A lot of my Varsity involved us going to quite like sketchy parts of Joburg. Very interesting parts, like reclaiming these like old spaces and like things like the Alexander Theatre in Bram,
right?
Which is this beautiful theatre, but the whole auditorium space was always locked off, but they threw parties on the stage.
Right.
And you looked up and there were these, you could see the fly bars and sometimes you went up onto the roof of the Alexander Theatre. Right. And I think I was part of a really exciting group of Joburg kids that wanted to explore. And I think that set some interesting like foundation for wanting to do this.
Okay.
And then... when we, so it was originally going to be called the Newtown Bioscope because we were going to be in Newtown. When that fell through, I was also one of those people. By at that point, I was booking a lot of domains.
Oh right,
because I was that person that like always had ideas and projects, and whoa, we could do this, and we could create a site that does that.
Yeah,
And so when I was searching available domains. Obviously, Newtown Bioscope was available, but then I was like, just try the Bioscope.
Right.
And that was available. Okay. So then I was like, I remember phoning Daryl and going, just in case we move. And also, Daryl was like, no matter what, if we start something here that other people now create other bioscopes, we will always be the Bioscope.
Yeah.
So that's why I was like, okay, we'll be the Bioscope. Yeah. And we got started. And then... Yeah, so we did a bunch of screenings. Our first screening as The Bioscope was very cool. Very cool. It's a documentary called Dark Days.
Okay.
Which is this beautiful, like, shot on film, black and white, all about, like, the mole people in New York, the folks that, like, live in the subway tunnels.
Yeah.
It's a very cool documentary.
Okay.
So that was quite a cool one to, like, start with.
Cool.
In Arts on Main, where you are, like, downtown and you can kind of feel the same grit of this documentary. I remember screening The Leader, the Driver, and the Driver's Wife, which is a very cool South African documentary, lovely kind of document of time about Eugene Terriblanche. And we screened that like shortly after he passed away.
Okay.
So that's when we started getting a sense of our of how we can pull from the millions of films that have been made when the time is right.
Right.
I forget the filmmaker, but he's a very famous filmmaker that often puts himself on camera with his boom mic and his... he's a British filmmaker. He made the Kurt Cobain documentary.
Oh.
And I think he made the Michael Jackson one.
I don't remember his name, but I know, you know who I'm talking about. Yes.
So yeah, this is when he came to South Africa to who is this guy?
Yes.
Eugene Terriblanche. He looks like Hitler. Do you know what I mean? He's got this symbol that looks like a swastika, and he's this far right wing. But I think he's an idiot, and I'm going to prove it to you. You know, so that's why he focuses on his wife.
Right.
And the driver who drives him around.
Okay.
It was very interesting.
Interesting.
And then what was exciting was a point where Jonathan said, okay, I'm working on my next development. This is what will kind of be the start of a precinct now, not just one building. And you guys should take one of the spaces on the ground floor.
Okay.
And we were like, this is daunting. This is scary. But we could do it.
Yeah.
And so that's when we started The Bioscope.
All right. So how was that all, once you'd kind of established your name and everything, how was that received? Like your first few months, what was that like, establishing yourself as The Bioscope?
Yeah. It was exciting. So Daryl had been working in production.
Right.
And they had their offices in Arts on Main.
Okay.
So he was around, and I was also involved in the precinct. I think that was maybe quite an important thing to set up. So I'd put up my hand with Jonathan. Mm. We were still just a screening project, but there was talk of us now taking this permanent space.
Right.
But I was doing something else, which was kind of very unique, and I don't think you know about this.
Yeah.
When this other building was now being developed, of which the Bioscope was destined to be on the ground floor of, the main building was going to be apartments.
Okay.
And I had seen the show space, which was this beautiful, cool apartment.
Yeah.
And my rent was coming up. My lease was ending down the road in Houghton.
Right.
And I had this really interesting idea, which was like, why don't I live in the show space?
Right.
And I'll document my life. I'll okay. make these videos and I'll help you sell apartments.
Yes.
And he was like, that's interesting, because I was about to try and find who could be the right real estate agent.
Right.
Why don't you work with an actual licensed real estate agent, yeah. but you be the person that actually can explain the vision of Mabuneng mm. And everything. So I was the first person to live right. in Mabuneng.
Okay.
And I fell asleep. I sort of think of what my parents might have thought. This is like 23, yeah. 24. I fell asleep every night in this building that was majoritively a dangerous construction site, yeah. where I was living in this one swanky looking apartment in the middle of downtown Joburg, where like it was scary yeah. in that sense. So yeah, but we would meet myself and Daryl. I remember meeting in the parking lots,
right,
between me showing people the apartments and Daryl between meetings. Mm. Discussing the plans to build the Bioscope, you know, getting costings back, yes. realizing this thing's way too fucking expensive, especially the seats.
Yeah.
But we made it work. I remember Daryl just going, by hook or by crook, we're going to do this.
Yes.
We got, I remember sitting down with him once. I think this is just an important moment to mention. I'll never forget.
Yeah.
We were doing more of the Excel spreadsheet planning.
Right.
Costings, forecasting, if we cost this much per ticket, and what would be a safe occupancy, mm. conservative occupancy, and how much could we earn, and how much would rent be.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget us having our heads in our hands going like, this isn't going to work.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we're not going to make any money. Yes. Like, this is going to fail. But there was this quick moment where one of us just said, but if we pull this off,
mm.
like, we're going to change a history.
Yeah.
We get to be the guys that brought this independent cinema back
yeah.
to not just a little town.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like we're in White River here.
Yeah.
And you're going to look after the people of Knysna.
Exactly.
It's like, this is Joburg. Mm-hmm. This is fucking one of the biggest, most important cities in the continent.
Yeah.
Like, and it doesn't have an independent or alternative cinema yeah. space. We could be the people. And we were like, that's enough motivation yeah. to just fucking do this. A big thing was getting the help of the seats. Jonathan had, in one of the other parts of the building, was a church. They'd kept the seats, and so we
okay.
that's what really helped us with these church seats to start nice. With. But yeah, I think what was really cool was finding the right film to start with,
mm.
which was this really fresh and exciting and ultimately optimistic documentary about Johannesburg.
Mm.
Called Unhinged, Surviving Joburg.
Okay.
It was comical. It was fun. It had this kind of quick, snappy right. kind of edit to it. And really important people talking about Johannesburg.
Mm.
But you'd love this. And I think this yeah. kind of set up a lot of our approach was myself and Daryl were sitting on the ledge or sitting on the, like on the pavement.
Right.
With a full house. We'd already done one full screening, and then we sold out a second screening okay. that night. We had a beer. We clinked our beers, and we were like, we did it.
Yeah.
And what feels like seconds after we clinked,
yeah.
someone rushed out and said, the film's not working. And this little DVD player, because this is 15 years ago,
yeah.
so it was like we were playing on disc.
Yes.
This DVD player, which had been our trusty DVD player for our previous screenings,
yeah.
you know, the leader, driver, and the driver's wife, and yeah. Dark Days, and all of that, this thing had now fucked out.
Oh, Lord.
In the last sort of 10 minutes of this movie.
Oh, Lord.
And it just so happened that the guy who made the film was a really funny dude. His name's Adrian Loveland.
Okay.
Really, really cool dude. He got up and kind of narrated the end of the movie
okay.
and went into a Q&A. And so it worked.
Cool.
But that set an incredible course for us,
yeah.
which was that we will always be humbled.
Right.
And I really think that cut any part of like arrogance or hubris or, yeah, it just brought humility like from night one.
Okay.
That it was like, this is going to be work.
Yes.
It's rewarding. It's exciting. It's important.
Mm.
But like, never count the chickens
exactly.
before they hatch. And like, and I think I'm super grateful that that happened. I hate it when there are these panic moments, yeah. and thankfully they don't happen often, but they do.
Yeah.
And they're a tough part of the job because it's not a situation where you're like, wow, sure, this is a problem. Let's think about it.
Yeah.
Or let's have a conference, or, you know, we'll brainstorm in the morning. Mm. It's like the problem is right now and every single second counts.
Yes.
There's 50 people sitting in a room waiting for it to get back on track.
Exactly.
And that's probably the toughest part of the job.
Yes.
But thankfully it doesn't happen too often. But yeah, it got us on a great course. And then the thing to mention, the main key story is the fact that you have this beautiful opening night, and then of course you've got a screen the next day.
Yes.
And we were aware that it's not going to be sold out screenings every day.
Mm.
And that we were in this kind of long haul. But what really got us going was the fact that Encounters is spearheaded from Cape Town, but had happened in Joburg over the years.
Right.
And the year before, so in 2009, they had not brought Joburg screenings.
Mm.
They hadn't brought the festival to Joburg for whatever reason, funding or venues or partnerships or whatever. But Daryl sort of knew the folks involved, and they were like, now that you exist, can we bring Encounters to Joburg?
Yes.
So we'd opened in June. Mm. By August, we got this incredible documentary festival to come to the Bioscope, to Joburg. So we had like the most important Bioscope people discover us through this in month two.
That's cool.
And we didn't start it with a huge budget.
Mm.
I think I'm happy to share it.
Yeah.
The Bioscope started on 120,000 rand.
Okay.
We put in 60,000 rand each.
Okay.
And if we had to buy our own seats, a whole nother story.
Yeah.
Because the seats are fucking expensive.
Yeah.
But we got those donated, and that's what got us started.
Oh, cool.
But it was like we projected onto the wall. So we didn't have a screen.
Right.
We had a white rhino lighted wall.
Okay.
Which eventually started to crack.
Okay.
And we got a proper screen.
Okay.
DVD player, as you're talking about, not this expensive cinema equipment, because we didn't need it, because we were playing this alternative stuff.
Mm.
You know, a documentary filmmaker just wants to get their film seen. They'd be happy to give us the film on DVD.
Right.
And they would trust us to not, you know, share it through the streets of Joburg. So, yeah, that's what got us started. And so we were off to the races.
Okay. Amazing. I got to say, I think my favorite Bioscope innovation, and every movie theater in the world should have this, is the little bench table that sits in front of all the chairs.
Thank you.
It is every movie theater in the world should have this.
Well, that's amazing.
I love having this every time I come here.
The Bioscope didn't have that for the first 10 years. We built, we then upgraded and did the car seats, which is a whole story on its own. But we then added pizzas.
Yes.
And we had no place for you to put your pizzas. Guys would be putting their plates under their seats.
Nice.
Glasses were often breaking because there was no place to put your shit.
Yes.
And so when we did do the move from Mubbening to 44 Stanley, you know, the question was always like, what do you keep and what do you wish you could have always changed?
Right.
And what I wish we could have always changed was somewhere to put your food, because that's a big part of the Bioscope.
Yeah.
Your normal shopping mall cinema, they give you a popcorn and a drink.
Yeah.
But we've got cocktails and we've got pizzas and paninis and salads and soups, and so having this bench was important. And you'd love this. As we built it, the guy said, but people put their feet on it, you know, like that's a bad thing. And I was like, well, make it strong, like make it industrial strength.
Exactly.
And of course, you know, literally while I'm talking to you right now, you've got your foot up on it on the bench, so it's totally fine.
Okay, like we said, you put these benches in when you made the move from Mubbening for 44 to 44 Stanley. But what prompted that move? Why did you move in the first place?
Yeah. Mubbening had an incredible blossoming.
Mm.
And for Joburg, it was very important to discover this part of downtown. It really like unlocked downtown and the experience of what it meant to live in Joburg.
Yeah.
And so I say that, I say the very short answer is I go, Momoneng was very exciting. Mm. It just then got too exciting.
Oh, right.
And what I mean by that is, like, firstly, this person who I've mentioned, Jonathan, he was eventually, I call it Steve Jobs'd.
Oh, right.
As in he was kicked out of his own company.
Okay.
And I'm not going to get into the politics and all of that.
Yeah.
Momoneng very simply became the victim of their own success.
Right.
Where all of a sudden buildings around them were now getting more valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they had to do was, or their approach,
yeah,
I don't think they had to do it, but their approach was to buy as many buildings as they could.
Okay.
But I think that stretched them out.
Mm.
So as the spearheader of this development, they themselves ended up folding.
Okay.
And the press was quite bad around the time, because when the assets that still remained under Momoneng were going on auction, people thought Momoneng was for auction.
Right. But,
and I remember even trying to stick up for it at the time, going, guys, we all own our own spaces, like your own apartments and things. It's there are a few spots that they've held on to that are for sale. This doesn't mean the end, but it was getting a bit wild down there. It was getting chaotic, and eventually the auction did happen. And I thought perhaps a big property development company would go, thanks for your service, we've got it from here.
Yes,
but it actually went to lots of different individuals, and it felt like it got sort of sold for scraps, and so that wasn't a good sign. So the future, it sort of felt like we were this cruise ship that was heading somewhere, or this big strong boat, and then the sort of captain left for a few months. So we sort of were just drifting a bit, and I was kind of waiting to see who could take over, but it didn't look like we were in safe hands. And there's a building that exists in the middle of the Momoneng developments, which is a little bit like the Lesotho of Momoneng. It never sold to Momoneng. It never participated. It never, they held on to it, and it kind of kept to itself. It was this industrial building, till eventually they were like, "Let's go!"
Right.
And they fucking turned it into this. It was called the Momoneng Lifestyle Center.
Okay,
which sounds atrocious to begin with. And the poster advertising it had more fonts in it than shops. And the one part that sort of faced into Fox Street, there was about, honest to God, 4 or 5 different bars.
Okay.
Each with their own speakers. Mm. So, like, all of a sudden, this one part of Momoneng, which was calm, was now fucking loud. And, like, at night, especially on the weekends, it honestly turned into a scene from Fast and the Furious, which is cool.
Right, yes.
For someone who wants that, this is exciting, this is fun, this is lively, it's energetic.
Yeah.
A friend went to go watch a movie at the Bioscope in the last few, you know, the last days of, the last times of Momoneng, and said, Momoneng's really lit.
Right.
And I was like, that's such a great way to explain it.
Yeah.
That's a perfect word, because it is exciting.
Yeah.
There were times when I was like, this is the most exciting and authentically Joburg place ever. And then there was times when I was like, I need to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Like, it's too much.
Yes.
Just like Joburg can sometimes just be too much.
Mm.
You know, something in Jeppestown was always on fire. Literally.
Yes.
And you go, like, what's happening?
Yeah.
There would be a guy, like, right by the off-ramp to get back on the highway, whose job was to burn shit.
Right.
Like, that's what he did for a living.
Yeah.
If someone said, what do you do for a living? He's like, I burn stuff. You know, I guess it's trash.
Yeah.
Or people's belongings that they don't want.
I don't know.
Or scraps. And in the beginning, you're like, hey, it's the guy who burns stuff.
Yes.
He's always there. Like, that's cool. When we started, there was like the kind of rose-tintedness of like, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
And then after 5 years or 6 years or now 10 years, you're like, why are you still burning shit? And like, can't you do it in a drum?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, why are you doing it on the pavement?
Oh, Lord.
Like, fuck. I'll never forget one day there was just a naked guy that just like wandered into town, like wandered down Fox Street, just butt naked.
Why not?
And that's when you realize like mental health is real.
Yeah.
And and it's the poor folks that can't get the help they need.
Yeah.
There was one day of like xenophobic riots, which thankfully Momoneng was avoided.
Right. Right.
But people thought that downtown was unsafe, which in a way it actually was. Yeah. But ironically, Mubbening was safe.
Okay.
Someone literally like was on the corner.
Yeah.
Going, guys, like, go that way, and like pointing people in the opposite direction, and the whole angry mob just moved, and and we skipped Mubbening. It was incredible. I was going to bring up something else. The N2 highway, which was one of the main arteries into Mubbening, they closed that for renovations for months.
Yeah.
So there were just all these, like, think of like a boxer.
Yes.
There was just too many punches until eventually I was like, fuck. And there were a lot of new people in the precinct, which is cool and exciting and nice that there's some fresh blood. But I then felt like nobody knew what I had done and how long I'd been there. And and I felt, obviously I felt that now this new Mubbening was very loud, very chaotic, and it wasn't right for cinema. Because those people that were listening to deep house music and jacuzzis on the roof, they were never going to watch the Danish film retrospective that we were doing. And our Documentary Filmmakers Association folk were never going to go across the street for deep house music. So we were in the wrong place.
Mm.
And I didn't want to be the sort of grumpy old guard.
Yes.
And it felt also like some of the people I knew that were akin to the Bioscope had left.
Right.
So it felt a little bit like I was in this kind of drooping tent.
You'd become an outlier almost. Like.
Yeah, well, imagine being in like a, like imagine setting up a tent for a wedding out in the field and like two or three like key poles going.
Yes.
And it just feels like you were the only one propping up this idea.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't be that. You should let Mubbening be what it's going to be. And so we were in the wrong place. So we made the move.
Okay.
And I think it reinvigorated my own energy.
Mm.
I needed it personally.
Right.
Because I was struggling at that point. And I think if I hadn't found this kind of life raft, which was 44 Stanley, the Bioscope could have perhaps ended at that point.
Okay.
Daryl, most importantly, had left to be the festival director of Encounters.
Okay.
And was in Cape Town and was a bit more of a silent partner at that point for a few years. And then his wife is Canadian and they decided they would want to move back to Canada. And so at that point, I'd bought him out.
Nice.
Because it just made sense. He was going to be on the other side of the world. And we got through that process. And now this thing was mine.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it was falling apart.
Right.
Like 2019 was this kind of slow punch by punch, as I said.
Right.
And I needed a renaissance of energy myself.
Okay.
And thankfully got that in 44 Stanley.
Hmm.
And I could keep all the things that worked. I could change all the things that I needed to change.
Yeah.
And with that came a whole new energy, which was exciting.
Mm. I guess there's a little bit of irony in of it happening there in that 2020 happens, which I think actually gave you some breathing room for the kind of reestablishment in a new space.
100%. COVID for us was actually a little bit of a blessing.
Right.
Because we'd given notice in Mubbening, so we didn't have a rent to pay there.
Right.
We hadn't fully moved in here, so we didn't have a rent to pay here.
Right.
We had the support of 44 Stanley to get going.
Mm.
And we were ready by the time everyone else was ready and legally we could operate as a theater, albeit 50%. But we were able to come out of that time. But I was able to, as you said, sit and think.
Yeah.
And it wasn't desperate. I'd had some money saved to pay the staff and I was able to survive myself.
Cool.
And I could just think about all the best ways that this new cinema was going to work.
Okay.
And the excitingness of where we could put things and we can add this now and we can have more of a gift shop here.
Yes.
And we can now serve this kind of food and do that this way. And
yeah.
So it was exciting.
Okay. All right. Some of that actually kind of ties into this next question, but now more than ever, theaters are kind of struggling in South Africa, kind of thing kind of all over the world, but the Bioscope is kind of been really steady for, you know, over a decade now. So what do you think is the key to that success?
So during COVID especially, there were articles that were looking for these questions.
Mm.
And so I was able to formulate this 5 years ago.
Right.
Because I think COVID spread everything up.
Yeah.
Whatever writings were on the wall, COVID just brought it so much closer.
Mm.
And so I could hunker down on that nugget, that idea of what makes it special. Mm. And I could see the future of cinema, at least in my head, being either this like big IMAX spectacle.
Yes.
Where it's like the most optimum way, the biggest screen possible to watch the movies that are made for that.
Mm.
The future is that or a small boutique offering where yes. you are hunkering down on the experience,
mm.
the vibe, the community, the niche value of 50 very specific people getting in the same room yeah. to enjoy something. And I was like, I think I'm on the right side of history,
mm.
of evolution. I think you're middle of the road, Will Ferrell type mid-level comedy.
Yes.
Those are now going to be made for streaming.
Yeah.
And you're not and they're not going to be as exciting mm-hmm. to go to the cinema because a lot of those actors are now going to even be in TV shows.
Yeah.
So it's like the lines have blurred to such a degree that I think we're now at this point where it's like, here's something you've never seen
mm.
with a group of people that are similar to you
yeah.
and the value of watching it in a group
mm.
as opposed to just you and your partner or just you on a couch. Or look at the masterpiece of this big
yeah.
spectacle with the best and greatest sound.
Mm.
So knowing that we were in a lane, understanding that lane,
yeah.
and really going, well, what makes us special? Well, it's the experience.
Mm.
It's the staff. It's the cocktails. It's the pizza. It's yes. the soundtrack of the movie as you walk in. It's the warm wood.
Yeah.
The coziness of it. The beautiful fountain.
Mm.
The trees. The, you know, just everything about 44 Stanley.
Yeah.
The that sort of calmness. That's really what makes this special.
Yeah.
And focusing and trying to make sure that our little offering is the best that it can be, mm. And the community,
yeah,
you know, whenever someone, you know, because we do a lot of stuff that isn't even cinema, and whenever someone says, "I just want to grow a community for this kind of thing," I'm
yes.
like, "Yes, do it at the Bioscope, whether it's talks or, you know, some film club, like it's all about that,
yeah,
And the success is focusing on that. Focusing on that experience every time. Can we change the colors of the slush puppy to match the colors of the movie?
Yes.
Can we play a certain thing? Can you dress up? You know, everyone come in tennis whites for challenges.
Yes.
You know, these little things, like that's exciting.
Yeah.
Can it be a quote along? Can it be a sing along?
Mm.
Yeah. And so you watch a certain movie on certain days. There's now tradition.
Mm.
We've got 15 years of always screening this movie on this day.
Yes.
People come for that. When I had that lunch, it was so lovely to hear people go, oh, we always come for
right.
this or this.
Okay. You know,
we've made it a tradition.
Mm.
And what an honor.
Cool. So given a decade and a half of history in this place, what are your highlights? What are like the real high points of the Bioscope?
Sure. There's a lot. So for me, one way to look at this is the incredible people I've had the opportunity to meet.
Yeah.
Quite early on at one of the Encounters screenings, there was a documentary that was made about George Bezos.
Oh, okay.
Who was Mandela's lawyer.
Yes.
He's since passed.
Mm.
And he came to the Bioscope.
Okay.
And it was just incredible to just feel that presence of
yes.
that guy. And in the audience that night was people like Justice Edward Cameron, who's okay. an important figure in South Africa. And you got the sense that there were lots of incredible people. And mm. I remember Daryl at one point pointing to this little old lady.
Yes.
Going, oh my God, look who that is.
Yeah.
And I wasn't quite sure, but then we realized that's Nadine Gordimer. Okay. You know, like just these incredible Nobel Prize yeah. winning South Africans. I remember once standing in the lobby, a small moment, and someone going, oh my God, that guy who just walked past you, just walked into the Bioscope, is Kathrada.
Okay.
The guy who was also on Robben Island with Mandela.
Oh, yes.
Ahmed Kathrada.
I think so, yeah.
So you just like, these people just, we're going to come to a place like this.
Yeah.
I'll never forget one day, Haley, who was a good friend and owned the theater next door to us, Pop Art, she was like, Frances McDormand is in the precinct.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was like, fuck, like Oscar winner Frances McDormand.
Yeah.
And she just wandered in.
Wow.
She just wandered in and bought a still water. And I just said, I know, obviously know who you are. I think you're incredible.
Yes.
And we ended up having a fat chat. And I was telling her about the cool shops in Jeppestown because it's this old neighborhood that's right next door to us. And there's this one spot that has Made in USA Converse and Van stock from the 80s and 90s. And they bought up all the stock and you can go and buy it. And her son, they were on holiday, like as a family.
Okay.
And so we walked, we took them through Jeppestown. We walked through this neighborhood that I think, you know, a Hollywood star would not have normally walked through. But she was super cool, and we had this. It felt like we sort of spent this afternoon together.
Cool.
And then I saw her the next day. They came for lunch at Arts and Main, and then she introduced me to her husband. And I had didn't know at the time. I was a bit ignorant to the fact that she's married to Joel Cohen,
yes,
of the Cohen brothers.
Yeah.
So that was this like, oh my god, fuck me. We got to meet and have dinner with Anthony Kiedis of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Guys that were in the touring party stayed in Joburg for a few days while the band went on safari and did a whole trip.
Nice.
And we got to know them. They were incredible guys. The one was a very accomplished photographer, and the other one is a really incredible percussionist and musician.
Okay.
Mauro, who's the musician, he plays with David Byrne and Talking Heads, and he was in Atoms for Peace with Tom York.
Jesus.
You know, so it's like incredibly established dudes.
Yeah.
And we had a dinner with Anthony Kiedis the night before the Red Hot Chili Peppers stadium show, you know, where like there was enough time for Anthony to make comments like, can we talk about District 9? And I was like, yeah, sure. What do you want to know? And I told him the whole story about the director. And
wild.
That was really special. Then also we screened Dave Grohl's first documentary, which is his first film output as a director, which was a documentary called Sound City. And that built a nice relationship with the guys from Sony Music.
Cool.
I guess you could use the word harassed them, building up to the Foo Fighters show, because Dave Grohl and Foo Fighters are my sort of heroes. And it was through that Bioscope connection that I was able to get into the meet and greet.
Cool.
And there was a chance, I was near the back of the line, so there was a chance to sort of think through what I was going to say.
Yes.
And basically my opener was, I own a cinema.
Right.
And we were the only cinema in the country to screen Sound City.
Right.
And I got a hug.
Cool.
And we did the whole gushy fan moments and meet and, you know, photos. And as I walked away, my back was to them. I had Dave Grohl turn to his bandmates and say, how cool is that? He owns a cinema.
Cool.
And I just thought, the guy, like literally the dude who I had grown up my whole life in my most fanatical moment idolizing. You know, when you're 16, when you're a young kid, like loving Nirvana. Imagine like knowing that that guy will think that like you're cool.
Yes.
It's like, that was like, for me, like, I haven't had kids yet.
Right.
But so far, like, that's the highlight of my life. There have been other moments and other special things, but perhaps the one, you know, thing was when you get to sort of come face to face with these people where not only are you enamored and excited and there's the whole excitement of being around a famous person, but getting that chance, which is very special, to kind of just spend enough time with them that you're like, you're just a human.
Yes.
And you are working real hard and you're doing very well for yourself.
Yeah.
And well done to you. But just to get that sense of that, which is cool. We got to meet Michel Gondry in Cannes to get his blessing to bring the Home Movie Factory to Johannesburg. That was also very special. To tell him that if the Bioscope were to be a cinema, it would be If the Bioscope were to be a director, it would be Michel Gondry. Yeah. It's very analog and button pushing, and it was quite nice to tell him that.
Yes.
And just to have these like people who were your heroes like know that your business exists, even if it's just for a moment.
Yes.
So those are some of the key highlights.
Awesome. With those high points that you spoke about, those really exciting things, is there still anything you would have done differently if you had a little time machine?
A good old time machine. No. I think I've learned now as I rocket towards my 40s, that one needs to follow your gut more and really listen. And I for the most part, I've always done that. But the gut has always been saying and telling me that, you know, we shouldn't have many bioscopes.
Mm.
You know, when I think of some of the most exciting, most iconic places in the world.
Yes.
You know, maybe a famous record store or a famous bar or place or live music venue. And in many cases, cinemas.
Yeah.
There is only one of them.
Mm.
There's only one location. And there's something very special and important about that. So
yeah.
We've certainly entertained the ideas over the years, and we've done many outdoor stuff, and we've collaborated and done things, but I think I remain steadfast in the fact that the bioscope will remain in one place.
Mm.
And then, you have these little regrets here and there when you realize you could have had more screenings of one movie, or you forgot to, or you didn't add this and that. But I think the way to survive this kind of business is to just go, oh well, shit,
yeah,
and move on.
Mm.
How can we make next week better?
Exactly.
You can't have too many days of that. I experienced this recently where there was a day that I was like, this is going to be just fine. It could have been so much better.
Right.
If that had moved to that, and if we'd actually put that on at that time, you know. But like, what can you do? It's too late. Just make next weekend the best it can be.
Yes.
So no deep regrets.
Okay.
In that regard.
Good.
Yeah.
Now, the regulars who come here a lot will really get to know your staff. They'll see the same faces every time they come here. But is there anyone who's been here since day one, since the get-go?
To be honest, I don't know when they started. I don't think there's been anyone literally since day one.
Okay.
I think I'm the only one, obviously, that founded it alongside Daryl. And I remember when we hired our first people, and it felt like we were sort of two parents that could sort of leave our kid alone in a room for the first time.
Yes.
You know, I remember reading something where it was like, if you can put your kid in a room and you can be in the other room, and you know they won't die, a whole new chapter of your life starts. And that was very much the case. But we had a bunch of folks in the first like year, 2 years, as we were finding our feet. But since then, we have kept all the staff.
Okay.
We've got Portia and Bongi.
Yes.
Swanky, Polite, Owen, Celine.
Okay.
And they've been with us forever.
Nice.
And I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we've been going for long enough, we've seen a bunch of folks like who kind of knew us from the Mubbening era, and perhaps they were international folks or people who've moved. And when they come back and they see the same staff,
yes,
that means a lot to them. But for me, what was interesting is when we did the upgrade, the DCP upgrade, we were now competing or kind of running alongside other cinemas more now, more so with the content. So we were now competing to some degree. So the question was like, why would you come to the Bioscope as opposed to the other one?
Yeah.
You always came to the Bioscope for the interesting, different content, and then you always went to this other cinema for the content that the Bioscope couldn't screen.
Yeah.
Now you could come to the Bioscope for all of it.
Okay.
Is the selling point. Because we still haven't lost all the other things that we did and made us unique. Like, for example, earlier we were talking about Superman.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I realized amongst many things, obviously it's things like the quality and the vibe and the food and the cocktails and the ambiance and the beautiful courtyard and all of that. But one little cherry on top was, you're going to maybe have familiar faces and friends in the staff that you'll come to know if you're someone that comes to the Bioscope often.
Yeah.
And I realized I don't have that relationship with any other cinema ever.
Yes.
I don't feel like I know the guy at the whatever, New Metro.
Yeah.
And it's never been about that. Mm. But the Bioscope can be about that because I've got places like where I meet my friends relatively often at a particular bar. And it's like you get to know those barmen and you get to know those people. They become your friends.
Yeah.
And we can have that at the Bioscope.
Yeah.
And so that was quite special for me to realize like that you can create your bonds. They have friends that people I don't even know that are like, this guy's a regular. He comes all the time. He always does this. I always make him that.
Cool.
I think that's awesome. There's a woman who they've really gotten to know, and she travels a lot. I think she's a documentary filmmaker.
Okay.
I've never actually forged much of a relationship with her because her relationship has always been with the staff.
Yeah.
And whenever she comes back, she brings them presents.
Oh, wow.
And she had her 40th at the Bioscope where we actually kind of did it almost like a lock-in. We like closed the doors so that the staff could change into sort of more civvies.
Right.
And actually be a part of her birthday, which was so cool.
Yeah.
So I love that. And I think that that's really special. And I'm really proud of that. So that's why one of the things we did and have been doing, it's still ongoing, is opened up the ability for people to donate money when they buy their tickets.
Okay.
The ticketing company that we use, Tixa, has this ability to have a donation.
Cool.
So in your checkout, you can donate to the Bioscope Birthday staff fundraiser.
Okay, cool.
Because it's a moment. It's a moment where we can use it as an opportunity to raise money.
Mm.
And every week we've been getting.
Nice.
Which is great.
Yeah.
And it's just like a little extra to give them,
which is
cool. They always get like Christmas bonuses and year-end bonuses and things like that. But this is just, I've realized over the years, we did it with the seats, where we're the kind of business that can do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can ask for that. We can say like, hey, don't you want to donate for this reason?
Yes.
And you got to take advantage of those moments.
Yeah. All right. So now that we know kind of the history, we know the last 15 years, what do we have to look forward to? What do you see the future of the Bioscope being?
Oh, that's interesting. Because as I've said, the answer isn't necessarily in more.
Yes.
It's not about it being replicated.
Yeah.
At least at this point, there's no obvious reason or motivation to duplicate it in another place.
Yeah.
I get excited by just how far we've come. So like, for example, we have Encounters running at the moment.
Yeah.
This used to be like a whole ramp up in terms of how many more tickets get sold, how every hour of the Saturday and the Sunday needs to be on time, and you got to start this and do this. It's chaos. It's lovely chaos. It's always been a ramp up.
Okay.
And when I was briefing Celine, who's our cinema events manager, who joined us about 2 years ago, she's one of the newer staff members. And I sort of was telling her how intense it was going to be, and she sort of looked at me a bit confused. Because she was like, I don't understand how this is different from any other Saturday. And then you realize, like, no, that's interesting. We, that Valentine's Day night where we had two sold-out screenings with everyone getting pizza. Like, we could do that in our sleep now. Well, not in our sleep.
Yeah.
But, like, we're quite used to that now.
Yeah.
And so that's lovely to see how far we've gotten.
Mm.
And I must say, I'm obsessed with that evolution and the tweaks and how it can be better and how it can be maximized and how it can be better planned or mapped out or, and technically as well. Like, I've since had to learn so much about these new projectors.
Oh, yes.
And understanding, like, there's this combination of ideas. The one is, I've just got this one cinema. Let's make it the fucking best that we can. Yes. And the other being like, it's still an indie cinema. Like, there is only so much budget. We don't have, you know, this big corporate budget to work with.
Mm.
But I take great joy in like getting that amazing service that cleans the light rods or whatever the fuck they did. And it just really like made a difference. Cool. I understand when this lamp last year and the heat wave was overheating and how, you know, I couldn't understand or what we needed to do. And there was this great moment where I think it was my dad who was like, you need to be the expert of this machine.
Yeah.
You can't rely on these people that you are dealing with. Like, you, it's your machine. It's your business. It's at the center of your business. And so I took great joy in learning about that and becoming a bit of an expert. I think I sit in cinemas, for better or for worse, and I'm staring into the shadows to see, you know, how bright their bulb is and I wonder what they're using and is this good or bad. And learning how to, the process of getting a screen cleaned. I met someone recently and we're going to get the bioscope screen like professionally cleaned.
Cool.
Those little things will make, you know, little differences. Yeah. And so I think the future is in that tweak.
Okay.
It's in those like tiny little ideas, you know, like Knit In Cinema. It's just such a lovely little idea that you see on the internet where somewhere in, I think it was Australia, they leave the lights on in the seats so that people could craft, and it was called like craft something, crafting night. I was like, we can do that.
Yeah.
Nobody owns that idea of just turning the lights on, but we can make it our own and make it very bioscope. So we've got this charity that we support. It's through my mom, where they make blankets for young mothers in underprivileged areas. And so they if someone isn't working on anything during Knit In Cinema, they can be making these squares. And my mom, at the end of these screenings, just gets given these like bags of squares that people have also pre-made and brought to Knit In Cinema. Right. And so it's those little like, what if we just did this?
Yes.
What if we just served that? And I'm obsessed with these little tweaks that can just, you know, make such a lovely difference.
Yeah. Because now that it's so established, it's like you're like iterating.
Yeah, it's like a refining. Mm. It felt for many years, I remember when we moved here and we had this very much this new idea of what the bioscope was now going to be in 44 Stanley. I remember just this feeling of going like, these are the building years. We're just going to build. It's like we're a builder. It might be messy, but we're going to make these big concrete blocks that are going to, we're going to build the house.
Okay.
And I felt like after many years of being here now, it's like now we're refining it. It's like if you put that pot plant there as opposed to there, it'll just look so much better.
Nice.
You know, it's like a sort of a feng shui type idea. If you just, the light comes in there, that'll be perfect.
Mm.
You know, I've always wanted to paint that or, you know. And so it's the refining, which I am excited about.
Cool.
And so, yeah, that I think concludes it.
Yeah.
So thank you, my G-Force. It was nice to tell you about it.
Yes.
Because I got to know you once we moved here, really. So
yes.
Did you ever come to the Mumbling Bioscope?
I don't think I did.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
It's always interesting when someone's like, oh, I went once. And you're like, what did you come for?
Yeah.
And I sort of go back in time to like, oh, fuck, I remember doing that. And I was looking through the some of the archives the other day, and I just, you know, it's some of the ideas that we've had. You know, we've just spoken about Knit In Cinema, but all the other ones that we gave a try to.
Yes.
And I remember we had one called Blow Up Cinema.
Right.
Which was like, you know, this kind of action night. And we did RoboCop and like, you know, we've done like all this like weird shit. One of the ones that was quite fun was we called it It's Scarier In and then whatever the original language.
Okay.
And it was, this is very niche. And this was a night dedicated to like the original horrors, which were mostly like the Japanese original or the sort of, I think Let the Right One In, you know, was originally Swedish.
Yeah.
And what was the other movie? Funny Games.
Okay.
You know, that it's scarier in the original language because it's odd.
Yes.
Because it really is in a lot of the horror rests in that country's culture and what that culture finds scary and different and odd and offbeat.
Mm.
And so when that translates to America, it often doesn't work. Because the Americans find different things scary.
Yeah.
Same as humor.
Right.
Speaking of scary shit, what was 28 years
like? I thoroughly enjoyed it.
That's amazing.
It's an oddball film. It's quite a few strange choices and swings and that sort of thing.
What are those swings without giving
There's especially spoilers. In the first like third, a lot of the like editing and cinematography choices are like, whoa. Like they're gonna like make you like lean away from the screen a bit because it's so like in your face in a way.
Okay.
Like there's this thing, some of it's cool, some of it doesn't work and takes you out of it a little bit. Like they do this weird, like I called it budget bullet time.
Okay.
Which is like, they literally did like a similar rig to the one that they used for Bullet Time, but famously, this whole movie was shot on iPhones.
Which one?
28 years later.
So even Years was shot on iPhones?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, let's just start from the beginning.
Okay.
The first movie that came out, what, 20 years ago?
23 years ago,
23 years ago, with a very young Cillian Murphy.
Yes.
Was called 28 Days.
Mm.
And that was also shot on phones.
It was shot on like on video.
On video camera.
I think like DV8.
Okay.
Old school. It's so, very lo-fi. It's an ugly movie, but like intentionally.
Yeah. And a virus has spread.
Mm. It's like zombies through virus. It's like Resident Evil sort of zombies.
Okay.
And that they call it the Rage virus.
Okay.
And then this one, this 28 years later is more of a sequel to 28 days later than it is to 28 weeks later. They seem to have kind of ignored 28 weeks.
Okay. Like so there was kind of days, weeks, and years.
Yeah. Because weeks didn't have, Danny Boyle wasn't involved, Alex Garland wasn't involved. That was just the studio kind of making a sequel without the original creators.
Okay. So now the original creators have come back and they've sidelined the middle.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we can almost speak of it as sort of existing without Weeks.
Yeah, yes, because at the end of Weeks, I'll spoil it because it doesn't matter for this film, the virus kind of gets out of England. It's contained to like the island of the UK in the original. And at the end of 28 weeks later, it gets out into the rest of Europe. In this one, though, right at the beginning of the movie, they say it's still contained to the UK.
Okay.
They like tell you that right up front.
All right, well, there's also something very cool about the fact that this is a British film.
Yeah. It's very because yeah, it's we all British
we tend to get obviously these alien invasions or you know zombies happening in the States and in these kind of American situations. That's obviously what made Shaun of the Dead so funny.
Yeah.
It was like getting this kind of British humor version of the zombie movie. Okay, but here now this is very British.
Yeah,
Danny Boyle is British.
Yep,
he did Trainspotting.
Yes,
yeah, he's done Trainspotting. He did
Sunshine, also with Alex Garland.
Okay, and then we've got Alex Garland who wrote this.
Yes.
And Alex Garland wrote The Beach.
Yes.
Which we forget and perhaps didn't know. But Alex Garland has done incredible stuff.
Yeah, he's gone on to be a director himself.
Yeah.
Done a ton of stuff. But okay, so what this movie is about, let's do our back of the box.
Yeah.
So again, the virus is contained to Britain or like the UK. And it, like the rest of the world is making sure it stays there. So there's like patrols and everything. So they're like the people who are still alive are trapped there. They literally can't get off the island.
Yeah.
So this is 28 years after the virus has broken out. So people are kind of, you know, establishing little villages and that sort of thing. And this is about there's a little village that's like just off in the sea. And it's connected, it's only connected to the mainland at low tide.
Yeah.
So we have Jodie Comer.
Oh, like her.
Aaron Taylor Johnson.
He's cool.
And then a young actor who's, I think his name is Elfie Williams. This is his first role. He's kind of the main character of the whole movie, surprisingly. Okay. I wasn't expecting that. He's excellent for like a first-time actor. Really good. And it's kind of about Jodie Comer's character has some sort of like degenerative problem. She's like forgetting things. She has headaches all the time. They don't know what's wrong with her. But it's clear that she's like basically dying.
Okay.
And Aaron Taylor Johnson's the husband slash father of the guy. He's sort of given up. He's like accepted that she's going to die.
Yeah.
But the kid is not accepting this.
Okay.
So he essentially kidnaps her in a way, like sneaks her out of there onto like the main part of the UK off of their tiny little island in search of, he's heard there's a doctor.
Yeah.
Like they see a fire, at one point they see a fire off in the distance and somebody tells them, oh, that's Dr. whatever his name is.
Because while the zombies are sort of ravaging,
yeah,
normal life has to still exist, yeah, where it's like we'll get cancer and exactly, the flu. And
yeah,
but of course, everything's broken down, right?
Exactly.
All structures and mm-hmm, and sort of civilization is collapsed.
Exactly.
Okay.
So he takes her off into to try and find this doctor who he's told is completely insane and can't actually help. But he's like, I got to do something.
Yeah.
To try and help his mom.
People have said that it's surprising in how much heart and emotion is
it
in
is.
It.
It's, look, it's very bleak. It's like, I mean, it's Alex Garland and Danny Boyle. Of course it's bleak.
Yeah.
But it is like quite, you know, it'll get you.
Okay.
It works emotionally. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
But it's also very violent and very like, it's fun and it's cool and it's...
Can it stand on its own, or do you need to have watched?
I don't think you need
days?
To. There's like a little paragraph thing at the beginning that was like 28 years ago, the rage virus breaks out, blah blah blah. It's been contained to Europe, but that's kind of all you need to know.
Yeah, in
it's
a way,
it's been contained to the UK. That's, I mean, it just gives you that little paragraph, and it's like cool because none of the characters from the first one are in it. You know, it's all new.
There's no Cillian Murphy.
No. Apparently, it's going to be in the next one because they're doing three.
Oh.
This is a trilogy.
28 decades?
I don't know. I think it's just going to be like continuous now. They're all going to be 28 years later. Because the way this one ends, you're going, it introduces like a bunch of characters right at the end.
Okay.
Yes. Then you go, oh, okay, they're obviously going to be in the next one. Including like, it's odd, Jack O'Connell, who's in Sinners. He's the vampire in Sinners.
The
Irish guy.
Okay.
Yes. He's given like billing right up front with all the other actors, but he's only in the last like 2 minutes of the movie. So I'm kind of going, okay, so the next movie, he's going to be like much more of a main character.
Okay.
And apparently Cillian Murphy is in the next one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that could be interesting.
Yeah.
I've watched something cool.
Yes.
It's called Stick. It's a TV show.
Oh, yes.
Over on Apple TV Plus.
Mm.
It's Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
The movie
trailer.
Stars are in the TV now.
Yes.
Very, very clearly. But it plays out, it's really cool. It sort of plays out just in the quality and budget of like a good Owen Wilson movie comedy.
Okay.
But it is a TV show. It's broken up into episodes. And it's the classic, I used to be a good sports person.
Right.
I had a lot of possibility. And this is in the world of golf.
Okay.
And he was a professional and then fucked out and is now a, sort of a coach. You know, like a PGA golf instructor.
Yes.
And where he works, comes across this young kid who's super talented.
Right.
And of course, he's got his own story, which you kind of get to, and I don't need to give too much of it away, but he says, I'll take you on.
Okay.
And let's make this work. But cool. Of course, you know, his life is a fucking mess, and he's pulling all sort of swindles and,
yes,
and sort of cons together. And so... Yeah, he can sort of find some redemption through the young kid.
Okay.
The little kid can sort of live his destiny. And so it's the classic.
Cool.
It's nothing like wildly different as a swing.
Yes.
But it's solid and it's fun and it's cool.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Cool. Sounds interesting.
Yeah, Magic. Do you have any Hey Did You Guys See?
I actually have a lot. We don't have to do them all.
Okay.
But we haven't done it in a couple of weeks. So
yeah,
let's do,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's do like, let's pick the big ones, I guess. So cool. Hey Did You Guys See? Hey, did you see? Tom Cruise is going to get an Oscar.
He's
going to get an honorary Oscar.
But it's not going to be at the ceremony. They're going to have their own ceremony.
I think they do that as its own thing, along with Dolly Parton. She's also getting one, as well as, I should mention the others. Let me find the other people. Crap, it's here somewhere. I'll edit this out.
What is Dolly Parton getting her Oscar for?
I don't know. I mean, she's been in a bunch of movies. She's done a bunch of songs for movies. Like, she was an actress, like, back in the day.
No,
she
sure. Did. No, I know.
I guess it's just because, like, she's had such a career. They do that when someone's had, like...
It's like a lifetime achievement-y thing.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
Because Tom Cruise's one is going to be for his, like, contribution to stunt work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it makes sense that the Academy has more than one function.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, more than one sort of fancy do party. Mm. So this is at another one of the Academy of Motion Arts and Sciences.
Exactly. And then I see choreographer Debbie Allen. I just feel I need to mention these people. And production designer Wynn Thomas will also be getting Lifetime Achievement Awards.
Okay. No, it's cool. Something we didn't mention at the time of Snow White
yeah.
was when Walt Disney made Snow White, the world wasn't ready for a feature-length animation.
Yeah.
It was the first feature-length animation. So the Oscars didn't actually know how to treat it or what to do with it. And it became, this amazing success. And so he also got given this like sort of honorary Oscar afterwards. And it was one big Oscar and seven little Oscars.
Oh, yes. I remember seeing
which
that.
Which is such a lovely thing. And it's just lovely because you wonder where those little Oscars are and if they're all completed. And
yes.
Like if you were to have one of the little Oscars, it's such a special like moment that could be probably quite collectible.
Yeah. Let's just do a rundown of trailers. Okay. I'm surprised you guys didn't bring this up. It came out a couple of weeks ago. Did you see the trailer for Wicked? Wicked, the second Wicked.
Wicked for Good.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't like that title, but I'm curious about this movie. The first one's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Even if it's way too long.
Like sure.
It's kind of funny that the first half of this two-part movie is longer than the musical it's based on.
But the musical is long.
It's 2.5 hours.
Sure.
Including intermission, it's 2.5 hours.
Yeah, okay, no, sure.
And this movie was 2 hours and 45 minutes, and it's half.
That
is wild.
The director,
yes,
John Chu.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a cool little bioscopy moment.
Oh yeah.
Someone who comes to the bioscope
attended
a Wicked sing-along, which I actually hosted. We did one of these Wicked sing-alongs, and I was there to make sure that it all got off to a good start.
Mm-hmm.
There was a whole group of bioscope people that came that had the like Taylor Swift friendship bracelets, and they gave each other friendship bracelets. And it was this lovely day where we screened Wicked and we did a vocal warm-up and everyone sang. She, one of those people, is in the world of advertising and went to Cannes because, you know, there's the Cannes Film Festival and there's the Cannes Advertising Festival.
Yes.
And John Chu was there.
Oh, okay.
Giving a speech. And so she was able to talk to him afterwards and swapped friendship bracelets and told him about the bioscope sing-along.
Oh, that's so cool.
So I just love these like tiny little moments where it's like John Chu knows about the bioscope and knows about the Wicked sing-along
that
we did. We will unquestionably do Wicked for Good.
Definitely.
It is very bioscope in that sense where it's like we are celebrating this lovely performance and singing and musicals. We love a good musical.
Yeah.
Because I think Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey is also going to be a musical.
Oh, okay.
They're doing the sneaky where they don't tell you it's a musical, but you can tell by the trailer there will be musical numbers.
Right.
This is the Margot Robbie, Colin Farrell film that's coming out later this year.
Yeah.
The trailer looks magical.
Mm.
So Bioscope loves a musical.
Okay. Some more trailers. Hey, did you see the trailer for Eddington?
Yes.
So this is Ari Aster's new movie.
Yeah, which the Bioscope will screen.
Yeah,
it's coming to South Africa.
Yeah.
There will be a South African cinema release.
Pretty interesting.
It's now been dated at early September.
Okay, cool.
It's cool. It's set in the world of COVID.
Yes.
Yeah, this tiny little town.
Yeah, a small town. It looks like some sort of like political like race is going on, I guess, like mayor or whatever.
Yeah, between Pedro Pascal and Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. I like the fact that Ari Aster's like, I can also do these kinds of movies.
Yeah, it looks like a little bit of like
they don't all have to be these nightmarish fever dreams.
Yeah, it looks a little bit satirical.
But very Western, I think, is going to be its vibe.
Exactly.
Vibe.
Did you see the trailer for the Springsteen biopic?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. I think all they did was give him like different contact lenses.
Yeah.
But Jeremy Allen White, who is the star of The Bear and Shameless, for those who remember Shameless, is now Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
And when I watched the trailer, I don't know whether you were the same, I was like, this is just a little too close to a complete unknown.
Yes.
Where it's like, these are all now becoming a bit too much.
Yeah.
Like, we almost needed like one more year to have...
Yeah, just a bit too close.
You know, just to have rinsed and dried and hung up and put away complete unknown. Where now, unfortunately, it's going to be compared to that in a weird kind of way.
Yeah.
I also think it's still a bit, not problematic, but it's a bit testament to how greedy and devouring we are of content that we are making the biopics about people that are still alive.
Yeah.
Granted, Springsteen and Dylan are just not dying.
Yes.
But But people are just living longer, right? Yeah. We're like eating better and looking after ourselves, and these are wealthy individuals that can afford to live longer. But it's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Because Springsteen has admitted much later on in his life that he very much has played a character.
Yes.
That Springsteen, you know, his famous album cover of him with the sort of working man jeans and the sort of cloth in his back pocket. And I think it was Born in the USA was the song.
Yeah.
You know, he's, I don't think he knows how to fix a car, but he's played a character that knows how to fix a car.
Yes. Yeah.
And he's admitted that.
Okay.
And so it'll be interesting to see what they do with the film. Also, I thought the trailer started a bit slow.
Yeah.
And only once the music picked up, the Tramps Like Us, Born to Run.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, now it's gotten emotional and interesting.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
It'd be interesting to see. And what's it called again? Deliver Me From...
I can't even remember what it's called.
No, there we go. Okay.
Yeah, that's a great sign.
Yeah.
Couple more. Did you see the trailer for... This is a bad title, but it looks all right. The Last Bus.
No.
So this is an Apple film. So it's going to go to Apple TV. It's a Paul Greengrass movie. So he's the guy who did He did some of the Jason Bourne films.
Okay.
He did Captain Phillips. It's got Matthew McConaughey in it.
Okay.
And it looks like quite a short trailer. It's only like a minute long. So it's sort of a teaser. But there's some sort of like natural disaster happening, and there's a bunch of kids trapped somewhere, and Matthew McConaughey is a bus driver.
Okay.
And he's kind of the only one who can get to these kids.
Okay.
And he looks like he has some sort of bus-related trauma. But it looks pretty good. It looks like well-made and like...
Okay, kind the of Last
like,
Bus.
Yeah, it's a bad title, but it looks like it might be pretty good. Like well-made and like kind of thoughtful.
Okay.
It looks all right. I think it looks okay. Let's do this one. I know the answer to this. Hey, did you see? Back in 2020, IO Interactive announced that they were making a James Bond game. So these are the guys who make the Hitman games. And they announced that they were making a James Bond game. And finally now, after like 5 years, we finally got a trailer for it.
Okay.
We had a trailer a few weeks ago. And it looks pretty rad.
Okay. When you said you know the answer would be I haven't seen
it. I assume you have no idea what I'm talking about. Yes. Yeah. But that's fine. But we're getting an original James Bond game.
Do you think this is timed around anything James Bond related?
Don't think so. Maybe it wouldn't even be like an anniversary. The anniversary would be the year after that.
Because big shifts and things are happening in the world of James Bond.
Yes.
The rights have finally sort of left the family that have controlled
it. The Broccoli's gave it up, basically.
For ages, yeah. Yes, and it's so now Amazon. In the hands of Amazon.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of spammy shit about, Villeneuve is in talks or Fincher's in talks.
So
and, like, all this shit.
We know, I can't remember, there's two people who've kind of been put in charge of the franchise. One of them is David Heyman, who's the guy who produced all the Harry Potter movies. He produced the Paddington movies. He produced Wonka.
Okay. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Apparently the directors so they approach directors and then get the directors to like pitch ideas to them.
Yeah.
And one of them is Denis Villeneuve.
Okay.
Another one is Paul King, who's the guy who did Paddington and Wonka.
Yeah.
Edgar Wright is another one. And then Nolan, but not the one you're thinking of. apparently Jonathan Nolan is going to be pitching.
That's going to be confusing.
Yeah. So he's the guy. He's Christopher Nolan's brother. And he's done more TV stuff. So he did like Westworld.
Okay.
And he did Fallout.
Okay.
So apparently they've gone to him.
You'd appreciate this. There's something called the Hard Locks, which distributors email cinemas.
Okay.
And what that is them saying, out of all their titles, these are the trailers we really need you have to play before.
Okay.
So it's like, for How to Train Your Dragon, we want you to play this trailer.
All right.
Because it's like it's locked together in that sense. And in one of the distributors, they were like mentioning the fact that on this one title, it's like, we hope to include a trailer for the Odyssey.
If
it comes in time.
Okay.
So it's like, it's very cool to like see the planning.
Yes.
Of Christopher Nolan's next film.
Okay.
And it's like, we're going to get this trailer soon.
Right.
Which is like, it's cool to like.
It's interesting because they're still shooting it.
Sure. Exactly. Yeah. Right. It's interesting to know that it's like, it's on the. it's on the horizon.
Definitely. But like, okay, just quick, like I was saying, this James Bond, it's an entirely, it's not based on any of the previous ones. It's a whole new actor, new James Bond, much younger. Like he's like, this is like a 20 something James Bond.
Okay.
Like as he's, I think the idea is the game starts while he's still in the Navy and then gets recruited into the 00 program.
And what time period do you think would be safe?
It's like current. It's current like, time. Yeah, okay. It's contemporary.
Yeah, I'd imagine James Bond and the world of James Bond lends itself very well to games.
Yeah, especially
have there been good ones?
There've been quite a few. They haven't done one in a long time. They were typically tied into the movies.
Like GoldenEye was like a big one.
GoldenEye was a huge one back on N64.
Yeah,
that was a big one. And then there were like some Craig ones. There was one with Daniel Craig where they didn't have a lot of stuff to like base it on. It was the Skyfall game. But they wound up doing like different levels were from other James Bond movies.
Oh, okay.
So you kind of played through other James Bond movies, but as Daniel Craig's James Bond, which makes absolutely no sense because Craig's Bond was like the one that rebooted the franchise. Mm. But yeah, there was one they did. There was a phase. Maybe we should talk about this sometime. There was this weird phase in the early 2000s where they were remaking like classic films as video games.
Okay.
They did a bunch of them, like The Godfather and Scarface and all these, the Warriors, they made them all into movies. And one of them they did From Russia with Love.
Okay.
And they actually got Sean Connery back to like record new dialogue.
There's obviously
sort of
someone going like, this is the next phase of entertainment.
Yeah.
Like we're going to, you know, a little bit like, let's redo all the classic hand-drawn animation as live action.
Exactly.
Now, why the fuck not?
Yeah.
Let's show the world how ugly a warthog really is. And everyone saw it and was like, yep, pretty fucking ugly.
Yep.
Didn't need to see that. Lacquer Man.
Yeah.
Cool.
I think there's more, but they're not timely, so we can talk about them next week.
Let's talk about next week.
Yeah.
Next week, our plan and our hope is to do a little bit of a special F1-themed episode. And so please come on back for that. I've got a good chummy who is about as much of an F1 aficionado as someone could be. I'd hazard a guess to say I don't know anyone else in my whole network who knows as much. So
cool.
I want to get him to one of these F1 screenings that are happening this week so that we can talk about it next week. And so his knowledge could hopefully amplify your appreciation.
Yes.
You don't need to be an F1 fan to enjoy F1, which is going to hit cinemas this coming weekend.
Yep.
The Bioscope will pick it up after Encounters is the plan.
Cool. I'm hoping to drag my dad to a movie theater for the first time in like a decade.
This would be a good one.
Yeah.
This would be a good one. I think we can talk about it to some little degree now because I have had a chance to see it as an exhibitor. I went quite early on and it's fucking marvelous.
Nice.
I think that's about all I can give you, which is just like, it's good.
Cool.
And it's going to really be one for the F1 fans.
Nice.
For those who aren't F1 fans, you're just going to love a good movie.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't need to appreciate fighter jets to like Top Gun.
Exactly.
So it's the same thing made by the same guy.
Yeah.
Magic.
Amazing.
Thank you, G-Force. And thanks for your time with the Bioscope episode.
Yeah.
And thanks everyone for listening to that. I felt it was important to try and tell these stories as much as possible. And so I hope you guys found that interesting.
Yes.
But yeah, we will come back again next week for another shift. And we hope to see you then.
Amazing.
All right. Chills.
Bye-bye.
Bye.